It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Little House series by Laura Ingalls Wilder brought generations of young readers closer to what it feels like to survive blizzards and prairie fires, tornadoes and grasshoppers, floods and droughts. A new book digs into the science behind Wilder's vivid and sometimes harrowing weather tales. Here's her description of spring coming to the big woods of Wisconsin in the late 1860s.
When Mary and Laura pressed their noses against the cold window pane, they could see the drip of water from the eaves and the bare branches of the trees. The snow did not glitter. It looked soft and tired.
Later in that chapter, Pa, Charles Ingalls, explains to Laura about sugar snow and getting the sap to flow in what he refers to as the maple woods.
You see, this little cold spell in the snow will hold back the leafing of the trees, and that makes a longer run of sap. When there's a long run of sap, it means that Grandpa can make enough sugar to last all year for common every day.
Meteorologist and climatologist Barbara Bousted is a Wilder scholar who has been writing about the weather in Little House books for decades. Her new book is called Wilder Weather, What Laura Ingalls Wilder Teaches Us About the Weather, Climate, and Protecting What We Cherish. Barb, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You write that in Laura Ingalls Wilder's books, that weather isn't just part of the scenery, it's a character unto itself, and it's antagonistic one. What makes weather so prominent in the Little House series?
I believe that as Laura was growing up and her family was moving around, they were so vulnerable to the weather conditions around them and to the climatology around them, that they became more tuned to observe and pay attention to what was happening in their air and water and landscape. And then I think as Laura grew, because she had paid such close attention, those weather stories, the weather information was really imprinted in her memory.
Why did she pay such close attention? Because she goes through some harrowing, extreme weather calamities.
She really does. And those shaped her life significantly as a child. And, you know, much like you or I, Kate, when you think back on things from your childhood, you remember some of the big extremes, either highs or lows. And in Laura's case, things like the grasshopper infestation and the long winter and its blizzards imprinted her negatively, but those lasting marks stayed fresh in her memory. And likely, as she retold those stories a few times to her friends, she sharpened her memory of the details of those events.
And this piques your interest as a meteorologist, because you're putting this data-driven documentation from the 1800s and layering that on her observations. And what do you find out from that?
When we have our weather observations, our record of the past, that gives us what I would say is a skeleton, like you're digging up dinosaur bones. And with those bones, you can see the shape of the dinosaur. You can pretty much tell if it ate meat or plants, maybe a little bit about how it lived. But you don't know what color it was or what sounds it made or what its skin texture felt like. I think when you combine the weather data with stories like Laura Ingalls Wilder's, you add that depth of information, that flesh to the bones, if you will. So you do get the sound and the feel of what that weather was like, not just the data, but what it was like to really experience it in that time and place.
I think one of the moments that stands out to me is Laura suffers from the abrasions of blizzard snow on her face and wiping away her eyes and finding blood on her hands. That, to me, is a moment and a description that you just wouldn't find in weather data, of course.
I think that her memory of that occurring is so sharp and distinct that it really puts an exclamation point onto the dangers of blizzards, that it's not just about not being able to see well and, you know, roads being obstructed, that it can actually do physical harm to us.
So Laura Ingalls Wilder is born in Wisconsin, writes about her family's time near Pepin and Little House in the Big Woods. What were some of her observations of the changing landscapes in Wisconsin?
Laura was fairly young when she was in the Big Woods. She lived there twice, once as a baby to young toddler age, and then again around the age, you know, 3 to 4 or so. And with her memories, she does have some recollections of things like maple syrup making during her childhood with her grandparents. And I think she reflected on that as an adult, not so much in what it was like to make syrup and have a dance because there was a sugar snow that made the maple syrup run longer, but that the landscapes were changing. People were cutting down the trees and things looked different. She wrote about it in her adult years in an article in the Missouri Ruralist, which was a paper in which she had a column, where she reflected on the Great Woods of Wisconsin and how they were changing. And those changes had an impact on what it was like to live in Wisconsin, which for her time, I think, was quite a bit ahead of itself, that she was paying that close of attention to how people were shaping landscapes, changing them, and thus changing really everything about living in those areas.
And you can really then trace it all the way back to the 1860s and 70s, and when Laura Ingalls Wilder is sharing these stories of her youth. How accurate are they to the timeline of what is actually happening on those days in the 1870s?
You know, for as far back as she was remembering when she wrote those books, she did a really good job. There are a couple things to keep in mind. One is that she was, you know, 60, 70 years old when she was writing these recollections of her childhood. And the other is that they are historical fiction. So while they feel very realistic and we know they are rooted very deeply in the actual events of her childhood, there are artistic choices. There are narrative choices that she intentionally took to move her story along as opposed to reflecting the exact precision of facts as she could remember them. But that said, in most parts of the book where weather is prominent, her recollection of things is pretty accurate, or at least close enough that we could look at the conditions and say, you know what, something like this probably did happen during her childhood. And a good example of that from the Big Woods is her recollection of this sugar snow, a late spring snowfall that prolonged the sap run by cooling things down at night, even as temperatures were able to rise above freezing during the day. And I can go into the weather records, and this is recounted in the book, to find a later spring snowfall that came after a milder period was followed by a milder period. And identify that to say, I can't promise that the sugar snow happened exactly as she described, but it sure could have in those conditions. And if so, we can identify the dates where it most likely did happen, and where if they did have a big dance at Grandma and Grandpa's house to celebrate the maple syrup run, it would have been on, you know, a most likely set of days there that stood out in the weather records.
Your mother put the Little House series into your hands and says, read this. I think you'll like it. I mean, did these books in your childhood kind of give you a taste of the weather bug, if you will?
I think I had the weather bug and the Laura Ingalls Wilder bug both bite me at about the same time. I was pretty young when I told my mother that I wanted to be a meteorologist when I grew up. And it was around that same age where she first handed the Little House on the Prairie book to me and said, I think you'll like it. And I wrinkled up my little nose and said, I don't know. And she said, just give it a try. Those interests for me grew up at the same time. I grew up as a kid who was afraid of weather. And by learning about it, I was able to overcome fear and turn it into curiosity. And that's the passion that my family fed as they took me to the library and got me books on the weather and helped me explore weather safety and weather preparedness and just what weather is and how it's made.
We're talking with meteorologist and climatologist Barb Bousted about her new book. It's called Wilder Weather, what Laura Ingalls Wilder teaches us about the weather, climate, and protecting what we cherish. When you write about the hard winter and you do your research, you start your research for the book with the question, was the hard winter as bad as Wilder said it was? How did you go about looking into what this family endured in the hard winter?
This question of the hard winter was what sparked my first curiosity to really research the weather in the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, because I wanted to know if it really happened like she described, or if this was an exaggerated recollection or something she, you know, really made sound bad to further the narrative she wanted to tell a story. And so the first challenge really was, is there even data available in that place and time? This is 1880 in Dakota Territory. It's not even a state yet. And European descended settlers had really just begun to arrive in that region in the few years prior. There were very sparse weather observations being taken. Some of the bigger towns around the region had routine weather observations like Minneapolis and Des Moines and Omaha. But getting a little closer to Desmet, South Dakota, required a little deeper digging. So what I found were weather records from old frontier forts during those days of early colonizing and settlement. And those weather records helped fill in some of the gaps on weather conditions a little closer to where Laura had been living. These are historical weather data. They're not, you know, they weren't observations taken in exactly the same way that we take them now, but they were enough information to help put the story together. And then another place that I looked to for other accounts and verification was other storytellers, other people who were writing newspaper articles, for instance, or telling town histories or keeping their own journals, and looking for those stories in other places too. And the more you can get those stories and observations to come together to create a similar picture, the more confidence you have in the picture that they are painting together.
As you do this research and the years unfold, you have these questions about the hard winter that leads you to co-create the Accumulated Winter Season Severity Index, or you call it AWSSI. What went into creating this index? And, you know, it's been called the Winter Misery Index.
Oh, yeah. So this is a great collaboration between myself and my collaborator, Steve Hilberg, who is retired from the Midwest Regional Climate Center and University of Illinois. And he is a weather nut, a weather enthusiast. I wanted to trace how severe the winter of 1880 to 1881 was compared to more modern winters. So we had slightly different motivations, but wanted to solve the same scientific question. How can we scale the severity of a winter in a way that we can compare from year to year and say which winter was more severe or more mild? And in deference to Steve, I try not to use the words worse or better when it comes to winter conditions. What some people really love it. Some people make their money off of winter conditions. So I try not to make judgments on bad or good. And through our calculations, we worked together for a couple of years, and this was a part of my doctoral dissertation at the University of Nebraska to solve this question. And he and I created an index based on daily temperatures and snowfall and snow depth to basically give every day a score, like it's a sport or a game, and then accumulate that score all the way through the winter. So the higher a score is, the more cold and or snowy a winter was, and thus the higher impact it had. So we used that index to look back at the long winter and determine that in a good part of the north central U.S., it was definitely in the highest category of the AWSSI, the extreme category, and in some locations it was the most extreme record.
And taking that index to recent years, we've had a polar vortex, in 2013, 2014, some severe winters on record. So in our warming climate, how is it possible to still have record or near record extreme winters like this?
In a climate like Wisconsin's, where it does get cold during the winter, we are going to still get those fluctuations towards severe conditions. What we might see is that they would happen less often, for instance. So what used to be a once a decade type of winter is now a once per generation kind of winter. And in the future might be a once per 50 years kind of winter. We're still going to get the extreme cold events now and then, just by the fluctuations of weather and the chaotic system that it is and the way that our waves can set up. But how often they happen, that part might change.
As people experience these extreme weather events, you talk about being part of the weather narrative and how Laura Ingalls Wilder touched generations of readers, and part of that gift is really paying attention to how the world around you is changing. Can you talk about how we should be part of this weather narrative and tell stories of weather events in our past?
I think that, like Laura, we can be a part of keeping the record of what happened. And there are ways to do that a little more formally and by the numbers, where you can become an observer for the COCO-RAS precipitation network, submit a daily precipitation total, and that goes into the database just the same as all the other data we collect. But it's done in your own backyard, so you become a backyard observer, needing only a particular rain gauge to join this network. You can also be a person who documents and observes plants and animals and their seasonal behaviors. So when certain species of bird return on migration, for instance, or when certain species of trees or flowers emerge in spring. That's one source to do that through is the National Phenology Network, where you can collect those observations. And also, people can just keep those stories themselves. When a bad storm hits, or, you know, a nasty winter or a not so nasty winter, a very mild one, to take a few minutes to write that down, write a little journal entry or a blog or a Facebook post or whatever means you have that you like to write in. And those stories become part of the collective too, and help fill out that data to really tell the story of what it's like to experience it. These are things we can still do now, can continue to do in the future, and I think are important to do so that when our next generation looks back, they have some reflections on what the weather was like in our time, because almost certainly it's going to be different for them. And so the weather of the past will be something they have to study with past stories.
Barb, thank you for your book, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking to the folks in Wisconsin. They are a great group that's tuned to weather and climate around them.
That is meteorologist and climatologist Barb Bousted. Her new book is Wilder Weather, What Laura Ingalls Wilder Teaches Us About the Weather, Climate, and Protecting What We Cherish.